I am fantasy author Elle Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, May 12th, 2019, and this is episode 13 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this has been a really long week. I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe I'm just tired. Or maybe it's because I'm recording on Sunday and I usually record on Fridays. And so it's been an extra long week in terms of this. But this week's best thing is a novella that I read. It's called Soot and Slipper by Kate Stradling. And it's a Cinderella retelling. So what happened was I decided I was going to read more fantasy, especially since I'm in this kind of pre-writing phase, pre-production is what I call it. And I had downloaded a bunch of samples onto my Kindle, some new authors to me, some authors that I had read before. And I was just DNFing the samples. Like I download a sample for everything before I buy it, even if it's only 99 cents. I don't like to clutter my Kindle, even though it is cluttered. But I wasn't even getting through the samples. And I was like, why am I putting myself through this when I'm sure there's a new Kate Stradling book that I could read? So she's an indie author who I love. Like, her novel Namesake is one of my favorite fantasy books ever. I love it. So yes, Soot and Slipper was fantastic. After the first chapter, I was like, I'm so glad I'm reading this. She flips Cinderella in a really interesting, creative, innovative way that I loved. Because I Cinderella retellings are my catnip. I love Cinderella and I love Beauty and the Beast retellings. And that's enough for me to like try your book if I know that's what it is. And so, And she has a preface where she's like, does the world need another Cinderella retelling? And you may think that, but I think the world needed hers. I also read Brine and Bone, which is her Little Mermaid retelling, which is also really interesting and great. I mean, everything, I trust her. Everything that I've read of hers has been great. So that was this week's best thing. It really energized me. And I feel so happy that I read it. Also, yesterday I went climbing. I went rock climbing outside. So, usually I climb in the gym and outside is kind of a big deal for me. This is only my fourth time climbing outside. And we were in Carter Rock, Maryland, which is right on the Potomac River. There's a couple of, you know, there's only certain places where people normally rock climb, at least close to me. There's places further out, you know, you can go to Western Maryland or like, I don't know, hours away. But this is only about an hour, less than an hour away from where I live. And it was basically a class. So my climbing partner and I had signed up for two outdoor climbing classes this summer, and the next one's going to be in June, just so that we have professionals who set up the anchors and the lines for us. And, you know, we can take the class. Actually, my climbing partner has taken the classes to do that herself. And she bought all the equipment and the ropes. But, you know, if you only climb outside a few times a year, I like her idea of trusting people who do it every week and who teach it. And as opposed to us and our memory of the class and what we learned. So she's been doing this. She takes the class a couple times a year for years, and she's convinced me that this is the way to do it. Also because I overheard some other climbers out there talking about some other trip they'd gone on, and they witnessed this guy who would set up his anchors on a dead tree. And they're like, yeah, we had to go tell him he was going to die, basically, if you did that. And I don't want to be responsible for those type of life and death decisions, especially for something that I'm not super confident about. So anyway, I had a great time. It was fantastic. It was like a trip from 8:30. I left at 2:30. The class lasted until 4, but I was done and I had to get back to deal with the dogs to make sure they didn't destroy the house. And I was also exhausted. I spent the rest of the evening on the couch recuperating and reading. And I climbed really hard, but it was great. It was fantastic. My climbing partner, by the way, is 60 years old. She celebrated her 60th birthday in the climbing gym. She had a big party. And she only started climbing like in her mid-50s. So it's never too late to try it. I highly recommend it for anyone who is even remotely able-bodied. You don't have to be like a superstar. But yes, lots of fun. In writing news, this week I scheduled, I did the preliminary, like, first schedule, because it's going to change, of book 4 of the Earthsinger Chronicles. So I had my week off after I turned in book 3. I rested. I did some more reading. I relaxed. I didn't write anything. Yeah, I didn't write anything. But I don't want to take too long, because then you get out of practice, and the longer you take off, the harder it is to get back into it. So I did my schedule. And so the way that I schedule is I used to use a program called Smartsheet, which does Gantt charts. I love a nice Gantt chart. I was never truly a project manager, but I've run my own business for, 16 years now. And so I do have to manage at least myself and, you know, subcontractors when I use them. So Smartsheet is great for project management. It's basically you get like a spreadsheet and you can create the Gantt chart and you can look at, there's different views of it. I also have used Trello and I use Notion and I kind of use all three of them in different ways for different things, which is kind of crazy. But for this, I didn't want to fiddle with the Gantt chart. Sometimes it is a little fiddly. And so I am using the same type of calendar that I used in December when I did my initial 2019 year-long plan. And so it is 6 months on a page. They also have a version which is 12 months on a page. And it's not your traditional grid calendar. It is like columns. So, you know, on the six-month version, you've got six columns for each month. And I just print out two pages. And I like looking at them long ways like that. So I can draw a line down and really mark off what I'm doing on each day. So I'm scheduled this week, this past week, the first week of May was rest. The second week of May has been brainstorming book four. And then the rest of the weeks to the end of May, I'm going to be plotting and outlining. And then I have scheduled June and July for drafting, the fast draft. So this book, I would expect to be between 130 and 150,000 words. The first three books are about 130,000 words. And so this one probably will be longer just because it's the last book in the series and it's got to wrap up everything. So I would expect my fast draft to be about 75,000 words. Usually my initial drafts are about half of the final because I write lean and then have to add, you know, the people who write big and cut, I've never experienced anything like that. That's why I don't have a lot of deleted scenes in general, because I don't know. My process doesn't create a lot of things that I have to take out later. Recently, there are, you know, earlier when I don't want to say that I know what I'm doing now, because I don't always feel like I know what I'm doing. But a few years ago, when my process was a lot more of a mystery to me, I would write a lot more. And it wasn't like they were deleted scenes. It was like their whole just trajectories of story that just had to go away. Like with Angel Rise, I think I was talking about, I think the third Angel book, I wrote three or four different ways, different openings. So I do that, but I don't consider those deleted scenes necessarily. Because usually what happens is I'll have to start completely over. Like if I have a trajectory that doesn't work, then it's not just a few scenes I have to pull out. I just have to start from scratch and take it down to the studs and rebuild. So I'm hoping I don't have to do that, but if I do, that is just the way I am, I guess. But even with that, it's still lean. It's like, and so I'm hoping, like as I'm thinking about this, I'm like, I might be deluding myself, but and not remembering things properly, which happens. But anyway, the plan is to write a 75,000-ish word first draft in June and July. And then spend August, September, and October revising / rewriting, which is my revision process, is actually just rewriting. And then in November, getting feedback, so having beta readers, having my agent read it. And that will give me December and January to revise based on beta feedback and turn it in February. So I have a high level plan in place. And this week has been brainstorming. Now, one of the things that I have to create a lot of space in my process too, which means I don't, even though it's important to me to work on something every day, it is equally important, as I contradict myself, to take days off, to let my brain sort of work in the background while I'm doing other things. I think that's just part of my personality. I had taken the Write Better, Faster class with Becca Syme. I don't know if I've talked about that before, but highly recommended. And basically, it's a class for authors. You take a bunch of personality tests, and she has done all this analysis about suggestions, I guess, based on your personality. And I found those suggestions incredibly helpful. And so for my particular personality type, I need time to moodle.
and space. So as much brainstorming, my brainstorming has been, I think I've only done 3 actual days of work, because I know that the brainstorming, as much thinking as I do about it, I also need to take almost an equal amount of time off. And then when I come back, my brain has made some decisions in the background. Like if I try to do it every day rigidly, it will not work. And I think I will approach burnout in a weird way. So I've kept it loose. I probably will keep it loose-ish the rest of the month as I go into the plotting and outlining. Loose, but not too loose. And there's the balance you have to strike. Like, am I taking too much time off and calling it moodling time when I'm really just procrastinating? That happens too. So I do have to be careful. So the schedule's there. And then the brainstorming. So the first thing I did was to list the themes that I've had in the first 3 books. And I put them on an index card. And then I went back again and to look at all of the notes, the kind of random notes that I've had over the past year, few years, however long, where I will scribble notes about things that have to happen in book 4, trying to trace any open loops that I have made in the book so that I can close most of them in book 4. And then I sort of hit a little bit of a wall. Part of the wall, I think, has been the negative reaction to Game of Thrones, to the ending of Game of Thrones, and seeing kind of the backlash. There was an interesting video that my friends shared with me with clips of George R.R. Martin, and it was a pretty shady video. It was like they pulled some clips and then they juxtaposed them with Weiss and Benioff, the showrunners for Game of Thrones, and just, you know, basically pointing their finger at the showrunners and like, you're not ending this the way that you're supposed to. And I know that that's a very different thing than what I'm doing, because it's me. I'm the creator. I'm not trying to end something that someone else has done with a different worldview and a different, you know, perspective. But at the same time, the first ideas I had about book 4, the few that I'd allowed myself to have, like I've always known where it ends, what the big things that happen in book 4. I've always known that. Even as books 1 through 3 have gone through the changes that they've gone through. But my perspective and worldview have changed. Like I conceived book 4 in 2015, I think. And not only was I different, the world was different. You know, I started this series in an Obama world. I'm finishing it in a Trump world. And that is significant. And I don't want my cynicism and my general state of being appalled at the world to creep in, because I think I was just a more hopeful, positive person during an Obama era. And, you know, like so many of us have been, it's just different, you know, it's just different. And I want to be true to the story. You know, the clips from George R.R. Martin in that video I was talking about were basically about being true to the story. They were asking him about people guessing, you know, the endings, or people guessing some of the secrets. And if he noticed online that people had guessed some of the secrets as he was writing, did that prompt him to change it? And he was like, you know, I thought about changing it, but changing it wouldn't be true to the groundwork that he'd laid. You know, there's foreshadowing, there's groundwork. And if you change it at the end because of some arbitrary reason, like someone guessing it or whatever, you're not being true to what it is. And that's very important. So I need to be true to what it is. And I think that's important, even as I'm different, even as maybe my worldview of how do we get there, like my idea of how do we get to this ending that I wanted to, has shifted because of the world and I guess just changes in myself over the past 4 years. And those things are kind of in there. It's like churning, you know. How do I end this story the way that I wanted to? And I don't have any answers yet. I'm still going through the process. It's a long process. But I think if I ground myself the way that I always have to ground myself, like whenever I get stuck, I always go back to why am I telling the story and what do I want to say? And I had fleeting ideas of the, of what I want to say has changed, but it hasn't really, you know, like it hasn't. And I think what I wanted to say is potentially more important. The idea of saying things are important, you know, still sounds very pretentious, but potentially more important in a Trump era than even in an Obama era. So yes, that is what I'm thinking about as I go through. I also think that I might need to work on the plot and potentially like a super fast draft of the third novella. So my novellas go in between the major books and they lead into the books. So the novella that I released, the book 1.5, introduces you to the major character, one of the major characters in book 2. And so 2.5 goes into book 3. And so I have a draft of book 2.5 that I did a long time ago. But as I'm working on book 4, I do not have a draft of novella, the book 3.5. I know the story. I have a very vague outline because I needed it for the epigraphs of book 2. But I haven't written anything and I haven't done deep character work on those characters. And so the characters that you meet in book 3.5, they're there to introduce you because they are very important in book 4. And there are characters that we haven't, you meet in book 3 briefly. So that's not all confusing. I do think I need to spend the rest of the month maybe plotting them in tandem. And maybe my first draft will be maybe spend a week doing a fast draft of the novella before I go into the fast draft of book 4. I'm still thinking about that, but that might be what has to happen. So, yeah, it is an exhilarating, terrifying process, but fun. Like the meat of this is, I actually do love it. You know, I love coming up with ideas. I am terrified of it, but I love it. It's kind of like rock climbing. I will be at ReaderCon, and which is in July. It's a conference in the Boston area for fantasy and sci-fi. And the way that they do the panels is I had proposed a panel, and then they give you a list of all the other panels, and you say which ones you want to be on and why. And there's a panel that I hope I get to be on, which is on writing and hobbies and how your hobbies influence your writing. And I would love to talk about how rock climbing has influenced my writing. Terrifying and fun. Those are the words that wrap it up. So yeah, that is what I'm going to do. And I think my next step to start the plotting and outlining after I've kind of brain dumped a lot of things. I probably haven't brainstormed as hard and as much as I wanted to and maybe should, but I know my brain is working on the background, and so I feel good. The next step is to go through Story Genius by Lisa Crone, which is a great book, and I made like a little template based on that book of steps, like a little worksheet of steps to go through. And so I never am able to really go through anything all the way. Like I'll start in one method and then I'll switch to another method. So I will at least attempt to start the Story Genius method. And for her method, like the first step is the pinprick is what she calls it. The pinprick is why do you care about the story you want to tell, which is what I always do kind of naturally. And then nail down the point of the story to a few lines with like what if statements. So that's sort of what my brainstorming has been. Like, what if I tell a story about two countries that have been in war for 500 years and separated by a magical barrier, but then the barrier comes down and they're forced to come together? And go through that for this. And then the next steps are to write thumbnail sketches of the protagonist. Who are they before the book starts? What do they want? What do they believe? Where are they in their life? And get the goals and the motivations down. And get the character wounds down, which is why I think I need to start back when the wounds start, which is the prequel novella of these two characters. I don't know exactly who the POV characters are going to be for this book yet. And I feel like I need to limit myself to maybe to no more POV characters than I had in book 3, because 6, I think it was 6, is at the end of my ability to manage, I think. And if I get notes back on book three that I didn't manage it that well, then all of this could change. But yeah, so I have a large cast of characters now. They don't all need POVs in book four. You'll see them, and that should be satisfying enough, I hope. But I have this long list of characters who could potentially get POVs, who have had POVs in the past. I know the wounds of, you know, all the people that we've seen before. I know these two characters, these new characters. I don't know how, whether they will both get POVs in this book, whether neither of them will, or you'll just see them doing actions. All of that still has to be decided. So that's probably where my attempt to go through Story Genius will break down, when I have to figure out the actual POV characters. And usually your POV characters are like who has the arc, you know, who changes. But I'm at the beginning of the process and I don't know all of that yet. I know the world events, or some of them. And then the next step is to get into where the characters have come from and where they need to go and where they need to end up. And I do have a list of where I want everyone to end up. And so, yeah, I think it'll be figuring out who still has arcs in this book. And some of them are going to have flat arcs, which I didn't have the language for this. And I think there's the K.M. Weiland book, which is creating character arcs. And she talks about the positive change arc, the negative change arc, and the flat arc for a character. And I go back to that a lot, because with six POV characters and many more, they're not all going to make radical changes, but some of them are going to have flat arcs, which is just basically like when the character doesn't change, but they have to change the world, or the world must change. And I was reading Save the Cat Writes a Novel, which I took a break on, because it's good, and I've gotten some gems, and I've written some notes on it. But I'm really familiar with Save the Cat. I've read the original Save the Cat book by Blake Snyder many times, and I use that in my plotting for years. So Save the Cat Writes a Novel isn't bringing a whole lot new. I think it's a great book if you are not super familiar with the original. But one of the notes that I did write was the Holy Trinity of Story is what she has in there, our plot structure and character transformation. And I knew that, but I wrote it down because I liked the way that was presented. But every character doesn't transform, which is something I didn't. Some of the writing rules seem so like, oh, your character must have an arc. Well, a flat arc is an arc, and people don't always talk about flat arcs when they talk about character transformation, because I don't know why, but it's confusing to me, and I need things to be like spelled out. Like, if you give me a rule and the rule doesn't cover all of the situations, then it's either, for me, it's either useless or confusing. And so trying to fit every character into this idea of every character must arc was very confusing to me. And I couldn't wrap my head around it until I understood flat arcs, which makes so much sense. So yes, character work and who has an arc and what type of arcs each character has. And then that will inform who needs to be a POV character. And so I think that's how it's going to go. It always goes differently than I think. So follow along and you'll see how it ended up working out. So yes, this week, starting the plotting and the outlining, and hopefully staying on track with that and not getting distracted by fear. We're not getting too distracted by fear. I guess I should schedule in, you know, time to freak out about the story going, you know, being terrible, or all the other things that come to mind, and then getting back on track and doing the work and remembering that it probably won't be terrible by the end. It'll be terrible for a while, and then by the end of the year, it'll be great. Yay! So I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next week. Until then, happy reading! For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.